Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about the prison. Some have called it a death camp at Guantanamo in Cuba. Our guest, Andy Worthington, is one of the leading experts on Guantanamo and has been for decades now. He is the author of the Guantanamo Files. He has worked with the UN and WikiLeaks. He runs websites at andyworthington.co.uk and closeguantanamo.org. He also has a band called The Four Fathers that plays protest music. You can check out thefourfathers.bandcamp.com. You can find him all over social media. Andy Worthington, great to see you. Thanks for coming on Talk World Radio.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, David. I really appreciate it. At this very particularly important time, as the 23rd anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo is happening.
23rd anniversary. So anybody younger than 23, it's been there their whole life. And the mythology around it from the beginning that it's, you know, just a small targeted operation. It's the very worst of the worst, the subhuman devils who can't be put anywhere else. Can you just remind us quickly how this started, how many people were in there to begin with, and who they were?
Yeah, sure. I mean, basically the United States decided that it wanted to round people up without any of the normal safeguards that we're supposed to be guaranteed if we're having our liberty taken away from us. So, you know, this was in the frenzy after 9/11, and really all of us are supposed to be protected, that if we're having our liberty deprived, then it's on one of two bases. Either we're, you know, arrested by law enforcement and charged with a crime and put on trial, or in wartime we're taken off the battlefield and protected by the Geneva Conventions. But the Bush administration explicitly decided that it was going to hold people without any rights whatsoever as human beings. I think this is the most fundamental thing to establish about Guantanamo, is that from the beginning, the purpose was to hold human beings without any rights whatsoever, with no recourse to the law. And these were people described as enemy combatants, who, as you have mentioned in your introduction, were described famously by Donald Rumsfeld as the worst of the worst. In fact, they knew very little about these people because they hadn't undergone any kind of adequate screening process in Afghanistan before they were brought to Guantanamo. There were safeguards in place for exactly this type of screening through the Geneva Conventions, but they were deliberately ignored by the Bush administration. So people started arriving at Guantanamo on January the 11th, 2002. The Marines who built the first prison there built this kind of warren of what looked like kind of dog kennels that were exposed to the elements, in which they were held for several months until more permanent structures were erected at Guantanamo. And throughout its history, 779 people were held there by the US military. The majority of these people arrived in the first couple of years, until November 2003, which is the time at which the use of Guantanamo as a place for harvesting people from Afghanistan stopped. And actually, at that point, for those who can remember the name Bagram, Bagram filled up with more and more and more prisoners. But Guantanamo was largely full by November 2003. And then they brought in some extra prisoners later down the line. So in September 2004, they brought about 10 men who had been held previously in CIA black sites, you know, in the network of secret torture prisons that the CIA was running around the world. And then in 2006, very particularly, 14 alleged high-value detainees who'd been held for up to 3.5 years in these torture sites were brought to Guantanamo. It was at this point that that actually astute observers would have recognized that this was the first time that people who were genuinely accused of high-level involvement in al-Qaeda or international terrorism had arrived at Guantanamo. Because all of these hundreds of people that they'd brought there before, none of them fulfilled any significant role whatsoever. And in fact, I would say that what people need to understand is that the overwhelming majority of the people held at Guantanamo were either low-level foot soldiers who had gone to Afghanistan before 9/11 to help the Taliban in what was an inter-Muslim civil war with the Northern Alliance. And as soon as 9/11 happened, then they morphed into terrorists against the USA. And in fact, what the United States did, which is such a fundamental betrayal of the rules of law, is that it explicitly described soldiers as terrorists, and that's clearly not the case whatsoever. And then I would say that hundreds of people were rounded up and sent to Guantanamo who hadn't even been wandering around Afghanistan with an AK-47, playing some extremely minor role in the Taliban, that these are people who were completely seized by mistake. And that there are a significant number of people who were seized by mistake. So there's a whole group, for example, of people who were seized in Pakistan. Dozens and dozens of people were seized in house raids in Pakistan in the first 6 months, mostly of 2002, based on extremely flawed intelligence. And actually, you know, President Musharraf, who was the president of Pakistan at the time, he boasted in his autobiography, which came out in 2006, in The Line of Fire, that in exchange for handing over alleged terrorists to the United States, the Pakistani government had received hundreds of millions of dollars. He was almost admitting that they just sold whoever had a beard and could be dressed up as a terrorist to sell to the Americans. And it's important that that bounty payments were being offered in both Afghanistan and Pakistan for people who could, they could portray as terrorists, foreign Muslims who were in Afghanistan or Pakistan. And to remember that the bounty payments, which we think were around $5,000 a head, that equates to a fantastically much larger amount of money if you're in Pakistan or Afghanistan. Possibly the equivalent of offering somebody $250,000 to hand over somebody in Afghanistan who fit the bill for what the Americans were looking for. So that's the rough picture of exactly what happened. I mean, I suppose I should just add that about a quarter of the people who were held at Guantanamo were Afghans. Many of these were people who had been, obliged to serve with the Taliban. It wasn't that they necessarily wanted to. And also amongst the Afghans is a particular scourge of ignorance on the part of the United States military. Case after case after case, they were holding people who were actually on their own side. So people who one way or another had been helping with the occupiers of Afghanistan, but because the United States had no interest in verifying who it was rounding up, they failed to take any interest in when these prisoners asked them to check out who they were. It just simply didn't happen. So overall, this prison has been a place of an abject failure of intelligence, onto which was then grafted the kind of punishments that I would associate with the kind of witch hunts of centuries past. The high up people in the Bush administration wanted to prove to the world that these people were the worst of the worst, as they said they were, even though they knew nothing about them. So what do you do then? You interrogate people and they don't tell you that they're the worst of the worst. They tell you that they're nobody. And then you think, aha, these are cleverly trained al-Qaeda terrorists who have been taught how to resist interrogation. And so you start torturing them to get them to admit to the thing that you believe that they are, which they aren't in the first place. And that then leads to a situation where these copious amounts of supposed evidence and intelligence against the prisoners, which was really exposed when WikiLeaks released the classified files in 2011, a close investigation of that, which unfortunately, nobody really was very interested in. I certainly put some effort into it, but it wasn't really something that the mainstream media picked up on. if you analyze those with any application of dedication, you find that certain people keep recurring who are telling lies about their fellow prisoners. Now, I'm not blaming them for telling lies. You know, they were punished in all kinds of ways to lie. And in fact, some of the people at Guantanamo were offered comfort items. In other words, they were bribed if they told the interrogators what they wanted to hear. But that's the story, really. The entire story of Guantanamo is a tower of lies built on unbelievably dubious intelligence.
It's a time when, after September 11th, as you say, Andy Worthington, the United States government was out of control, was sending people to various countries to have them tortured, was sending them to Bashar al-Assad, whose overthrow must now be celebrated in favor of people who would have made great suspects to haul off to Guantanamo, was setting up secret prisons it told nobody about whatsoever across Europe and Africa and I don't know where else. I don't know that any of those practices have ended. I don't know what you know or what you suspect in terms of, but why focus on Guantanamo out of all of these places of torture around the world?
Well, I mean, I've been interested as well, David, in the black sites. I mean, the two things are very connected in a way. Guantanamo was the visible icon of US lawlessness after 9/11. And, you know, as you say, the black sites were extremely well hidden for really quite a long time. The stories of those didn't really start to emerge until the end of 2005. I became interested in Guantanamo really because the United States is a country which sets itself up as a beacon shining righteousness out to the rest of the world. Was behaving exactly like a dictatorship behaves in response to the 9/11 attacks and imprisoning people as though due process was a kind of fairy tale that could be switched on and off when you felt like it. So it appalled me that they were holding people without any fundamental rights whatsoever, and that they wouldn't even tell the world who they were holding. So in those early years, I watched the stories as they came out, as people did who were paying close attention, because the media was never really that bothered. But of course, we had British nationals in Guantanamo. So that was quite a big story when they came back to the UK. And I began researching in the fall of 2005, actually, when they still hadn't told the world who they were holding. And in the spring of 2006, so over 4 years after the prison opened, they lost a freedom of information lawsuits brought by the Associated Press, and they were required for the first time to release publicly the names of the prisoners they were holding and thousands of pages of supporting documentation, which is when I decided, okay, now I've got something I can work on. I'm going to work out who these guys are. I'm going to tell their stories. And I thought that somebody else would do that. Particularly, I thought that the New York Times and the Washington Post might assign some investigators to spend many, many months working on these documents and what they meant. But it never happened. So I ended up becoming the kind of custodian of the men's stories. I spent 14 months researching and writing the book, The Guantanamo Files. When that came out, actually, after I'd finished it and sent it to the publishers, the I think it was one of the first prisoners who died at Guantanamo died. And I actually contacted The Guardian. I went, yeah, I've been researching this story for a year. Do you want me to write a story for you about this guy? Because I'd know quite a bit about him. And they just went, we'll get it from the AP. And I realized that the mainstream media, there was not really an opening there. So that's when I started immediately. You know, I had a website, I started writing there, started, getting the word out via various supportive websites at the time. I mean, you remember what that world was like nearly 20 years ago. Sure. And I've carried on ever since. And, in this unfortunate little backwater of international human rights, where nobody really cares about Guantanamo, David. I mean, that's the sad thing.
Well, it's a U.S. death camp. Or in China, the prisoners would be getting Nobel Peace Prizes just for being prisoners. But it's a U.S. death camp. But the point you make about it being the public face of these horrors, it's been imitated across the world by dictatorships and so-called democracies alike. And when Israel announced this is our 9/11 a couple of Octobers ago, everybody knew that meant it could do everything we've seen in Guantanamo and everything related, right? I mean, this has been...
Well, it's true, except I would say, David, that one of the places that the Bush administration drew inspiration from was clearly the Israel's prisons for Palestinians back in January 2002, because Israel's horrendous torture prisons for Palestinians, shredding due process, already existed at that point. And, you know, I think what I find interesting is, you know, the notion of arbitrary detention. Administrative detention that they have in Israeli prisons, which actually they inherited from the British during the time that they were the mandate holders in Palestine. But administrative detention is what has been plaguing Guantanamo for most of its existence. Just briefly to explain, as I said, in the beginning, the men had absolutely no rights as human beings whatsoever. It took 2.5 years for them to get a case to the Supreme Court, who said, actually, if you're holding somebody who says that they're innocent and they have absolutely no way of establishing whether or not that's the case, then we think that we're going to have to extend habeas corpus rights to prisoners in wartime, which is not a normal thing. But they recognized there was no escape route from Guantanamo. To cut a long story short, the Bush administration fought back. It wasn't until 2008 that the prisoners went to the Supreme Court again and were given constitutionally guaranteed habeas corpus rights. Over the next couple of years, district court judges in the United States heard their cases. They put their case through their lawyers. The U.S. government presented its case. And in several dozen cases, the judges went to the government, you haven't provided any evidence whatsoever that these people had any meaningful involvement with Al-Qaeda, with the Taliban, and ordered them to be freed. Appeals court judges, you know, quite a malignant gathering of right-wing appeals court judges at the time, who then started passing rulings stripping the prisoners of habeas corpus rights. And ever since then, only one person has been released from Guantanamo through winning a habeas corpus petition. Some prisoners who've been in the military commissions, which is a broken legal process, but is actually a legal process, have also been freed. But if you're an ordinary prisoner at Guantanamo, what's happened since 2010, and Obama set it up, were review processes, administrative review processes. It's administrative detention at Guantanamo. And that's been the case ever since. And what we're looking at now at Guantanamo, after 4 years of Joe Biden, is that he's holding 26 men now. 14 of these men have long been approved for release from Guantanamo by these administrative review processes. Between 2 and 4 years, they've been waiting since they were told that the US government no longer wanted to hold them. And in two cases, for 15 years. But if the United States government finds it a little bit inconvenient to release them, it doesn't have to do anything because it's administrative detention. There's no legal component of these decisions that means that they can go before a judge and have a judge say, this prisoner has been held for 4 years since you said that you didn't want to hold him. Do you not think that maybe it's time for you to do something about it? That's what we're looking at now, David. With just a few weeks until Donald Trump comes in, and we know he's going to seal Guantanamo shut again, these men are waiting for the grace and favor of the Biden administration in its dying days to grace them with freedom. There's no legal aspect to it. These are effectively the personal prisoners of the President of the United States and of Antony Blinken and of the Secretary of Defense.
Ever since the first President Bush got elected on a campaign smearing an opponent for having released a criminal from prison, every U.S. politician has been horrified that if they release even some innocent person, and even if the statistics are perfectly normal, they'll be blamed for something. We've got a world ravaged by environmental catastrophe and wars and genocides. How much of that is the responsibility of people who've been released from Guantanamo? How many disasters have resulted thus far from letting these people out?
Well, I would say shockingly little. But what used to happen, I'm presuming it's still happening, but it's not really reported, is that there is an internal process within the United States government that reports annually, let's say it is, on the recidivism of former prisoners. And the figures that they've come up with are absolutely impossible. The number of people that they say have returned to the battlefield, that's, in the first case, some people were never on a battlefield. So if they have done anything, they've actually gone on a battlefield for the first time. But the figures simply don't add up, David. I mean, and these were horrible reports where they never provided any evidence to back up their assertions, the numbers that they were suggesting. And I think that a lot of what that came down to was that they were sending people back to Afghanistan who almost by default would become targets of the Taliban for wanting to recruit them into fighting the United States, who were still the occupying power in Afghanistan. But I just have no idea how they came up with these figures, because I think it's actually a very small number of people engaged in recidivism compared to what they see in the normal US justice system. And I think the most remarkable thing about Guantanamo is how many astonishing individuals have emerged from that prison, articulate and without actually any rancor about what has happened to them, and who have so carefully and painstakingly and eloquently put the case for damning the United States even more than it's damned itself, through its behavior.
Absolutely amazing, eloquent individuals and people whose stories you've been telling for years. I know in the news lately, there's a prisoner suing to not be sent from Guantanamo to a prison in Iraq. How many of these people have been freed versus how many have been sent to other prisons elsewhere?
Well, that's a huge problem, of course, I would have to say, if your home government takes you back from Guantanamo, then it's largely the business of your home government as to how they treat you. Although, under international law, the United States' obligations towards people that it has treated so lawlessly and appallingly doesn't end with their release, even with their home governments. But what's happened over the years at Guantanamo is that dozens and dozens of prisoners have been unable to be returned home. Most, in some cases, because it's not safe for those individuals. But in most cases, it's because Congress people have decided that it's not safe to send these people back to those countries because they regard them as a terrorist threat. And that's meant that third countries have had to be found, which are prepared to offer new homes to these people. Every part of this process is opaque. Nothing about it, about the agreements that are made between the US government and these host governments, none of it is made public. These people are still fundamentally held without rights. And although some of them have been treated well by their host governments, some of them have been treated absolutely appallingly, and have literally been imprisoned in conditions as bad as Guantanamo. Famous case was a few years ago when the Obama administration sent dozens of men to the United Arab Emirates who promised that they would help them to rebuild their lives. They imprisoned them all in circumstances at least as horrible as what happened at Guantanamo. And so this is actually quite an ongoing issue for which accountability is desperately required. And it is, as I say, this is not something that I'm inventing about the requirements of these people. These are requirements under international humanitarian law, where the United States has obligations. And the case you just mentioned of Abdel Hadi Al Iraqi, who is by far and away the most physically disabled prisoner that Guantanamo has ever held, partly because he's had seven botched operations on a degenerative spinal condition that he's got. he agreed to a plea deal in the military commission trial system at Guantanamo. And the responsibility of the United States is to find a safe third country for him. It's a bit of an uphill task, but it's their responsibility. The notion that they're now saying, actually, we just want to send him to Iraq, when clearly there is no guarantee that he will either be safe or that he will be provided with the lifetime care that he needs, is just it's just mind-boggling. I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling, but it's part of the casual cruelty of Guantanamo. You know, when they get rid of you, they get rid of you.
Why not send him here to Virginia? We got far more dangerous people living here already. What's the problem? We've got just a few minutes left. Andy Worthington, what are the prospects for the coming weeks and the coming years? I know there were a bunch of people set to be let out of Guantanamo at the time that Israel started this new slaughter in Gaza, and it was apparently felt that a time of an uptick in war madness was not the time for a step of decency or sanity or law compliance.
Yeah, well, that was really quite shocking, wasn't it? And, you know, and the fact that ever since then, so this is 14, 15 months ago that the Biden administration has done nothing either to renew this resettlement deal or to find another third country that would take in these men. So as we're looking at, you know, the countdown to the start of the next Trump administration, this is something that desperately needs resolving, because otherwise these men will be entombed for another four years under Donald Trump. And like I say, not only have they been imprisoned for up to 23 years, but these men have been approved for release by high level U.S. government review processes for years and years and years. If any other country was doing this, it would be a complete scandal. So, you know, let's hope that happens. And maybe, David, as we're running out of time, we could talk sometime in the future about what the situation is when Trump is in charge of what I still hope now will be a much smaller number of men. But all of the men who are held there, the men who are charged in the military commissions, the alleged people responsible for 9/11, the plea deals that Lloyd Austin is trying to undermine. You know, there are three forever prisoners who the U.S. is still holding, has never charged them and won't approve them for release either. One of whom is Abu Zubaydah, the man that they invented the torture program for, who they've never managed to charge with anything. It doesn't matter how much the population of Guantanamo shrinks, the stories of the people that are held there are still stories of just horrendous rank injustice and brutality and a foulness at the heart of the United States government, dating back to the start of this war on terror, that, you know, that is still such a stain on the United States today.
And Obama's proposal to close the place was always a proposal to bring the place onto the mainland and mainstream the lawlessness. And to a great extent, that's been done. And we're all looking forward rather than backward to more of it. I wish we could go on for hours, but we have to stop for now. But I encourage people to go to andyworthington.co.uk, to closeguantanamo.org to get involved. We're at another anniversary as of January 11th, and there should be no more of them. Andy Worthington, thank you for everything you've been doing all these years and for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you very much, David. It's been a pleasure.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.